Mitchell Whitelaw, who is Associate Professor at the Faculty of Arts and Design at the University of Canberra. And Mitchell will be talking today about array aesthetics and transmateriality. So welcome Mitchell, who's got his presentation.
Hurrah. Thanks, Ross, and thanks for having me here. So this presentation is fairly straightforward, I hope. I'm just going to really try and outline a few simple ideas and introduce you to some practice, which I think, I'm using to try and illustrate some of these concepts. I have my own entry in the sort of neologism of the conference prize, transmateriality. I'll get to that a little bit later. My presentation starts with the screen and the complete ubiquity of the screen that we currently are experiencing in every shape and size. There's poor Steve struggling with his iPhone up there. So, we now have screens in every shape and size. We have them in urban scale, personal scale, intimate scale. I don't think we can probably fit any more screens into our kind of existence. They're completely ubiquitous. So which raises a kind of just an interesting pragmatic question for the media arts then. What happens when we're completely surrounded? We spend our lives looking at glowing rectangles. This is the Onion magazine with a fantastic report. Yes, 90% of our waking hours are spent staring at glowing rectangles. So I have, two right in front of me right now. So what happens to the media arts practice, which has traditionally been a screen-based practice, when we are completely encircled by glowing rectangles? These screens have a couple of attributes, which I'm going to outline here and then talk about some practice that tries to kind of pull away from those. The first of those, which is... This is fairly obvious stuff. The first of those is that screens are self-effacing. They tend to make themselves disappear. They tend to try and make themselves their physical materiality. They tend to downplay that, push it to the background, in order to be a neutral substrate for their content, not particularly surprising at all. Here's a great example of self-effacing screens. iPhone 4, of course, has the Retina display with the ultra-fine pixels way over on the right there, which are so fine that they're actually beyond the sort of optical limit of human vision. So the pixels have finally reached the physical dimensions which make them invisible. This is kind of they've crossed a kind of perceptual threshold in terms of self-effacing. The other important attribute of screens is that they're general purpose. That they have this aspect of generality, which is that they can contain anything. So Apple ad, our Apple user here is looking at the New York Times, but they could equally be looking at video, checking their email, doing any number of other things. So the screen doesn't care about content. The screen is a neutral substrate. It's general purpose. It has this aspect of generality. This leads me to these questions about what happens to art, especially media art, in the age of glowing rectangles. And what I'm going to outline here is a tendency for especially this movement, or this tendency of screens to be general purpose. There's one of the key dynamics that I'm talking about here is a resistance to generality, a pulling away from generality and towards its opposite, which is what I'm calling specificity. What I'm going to propose comes out of that is some ideas, a kind of sketch of what might be a kind of post-screen practice, or at least a kind of push against the screen in particular sections of media arts practice. This is a limited sample. This is not claiming to be comprehensive in any kind of way. And I'm looking at really two strains, two different lines of these. The first one is a kind of formal trope of what I'm calling arrays, which I started noticing a while ago. I think this might have been the first time I started, that I became aware of them. This is from the opening ceremony of the 2008 Beijing Games. So you might remember there were this huge grid of Chinese guys playing these huge traditional square drums. And then, of course, the party trick was that they all had LEDs embedded in the surface, and the LEDs were sound or pressure activated, so when they struck the drum, the LED would fire. Now here they're all on, which is actually just kind of a trick of the photograph. Actually, they were completely independent and desynchronized. You can see just one guy in the middle there who happens to be off. So these are And this, in the context of the opening ceremony, as I'm sure you'd remember, completely dominated by screens and completely dominated by sort of screenful images. Remember, there was that computer graphics simulated fireworks display, which was spliced seamlessly into the middle. So this whole thing is incredibly, you know, riddled with the language and the ubiquity of the screen and the self-effacing pixel. And then suddenly, the in the middle of it, here are all these pixels which have become amplified. They're human-sized pixels. They're huge. And this is like a screen. This is an array which imitates the formal layout of the screen. It's a big grid. It has these little optical elements which are all independently articulated. But suddenly, the screen is pushing itself forward. The substrate of the screen is pushing itself forward. And you get these kind of pixels coming forward and being present. This is a kind of key characteristic of this genre of arrays that I'm going to talk about. In the process of being present, they're moving away from a kind of generality, from the general purposeness of the screen, towards a specificity. So that LED array of drummers, they can't show you, you know, colour images. They can't even show you levels of grey. They can show you one-bit images, and they can show you very, very low-resolution configurations. So they're a very poor screen by any kind of measure of screens, and yet they seem to there was a kind of presence and a performative kind of, you know, energy and excitement about that configuration, which I found really interesting. So this is the first example of this pull away from the generality of the screen and towards a kind of specificity. Here's another example, quite a relatively old one, a lovely one, Daniel Rosen's work, Wooden Mirror. Here's a video of it. So this is a big octagonal array of tiles, wooden tiles, which tilt on their horizontal axis in response to data from a video camera. So again, it's a very poor screen. It's a low-resolution screen. And it's one actually that's made from the physical configuration of its image elements, so they're not even luminous in this case. It's to do with light and shadow. It functions as a screen, but of course it imitates the screen, it refers to the screen, but it actually kind of, again, makes the screen present. It turns the screen into a kind of material thing. And notice the sound is actually really beautiful and really crucial. So this is a kind of clattering wooden kind of mechanism. It's not a sort of silent, self-effacing, neutral thing. It's a beautiful sculptural object. And Rosen's made quite a few of these mirrors. This one's, I won't show you all of them. This is a lovely one called Trash Mirror. Here, interestingly, Wooden Mirror still used a uniform square grid. Trash Mirror shows that you don't even have to use that. You don't even have to use a uniform square grid. You can use an arbitrary configuration of odd-shaped bits and pieces. These are just like bits of rubbish from the street which have been turned into pixels. And they operate in the same way. So again, we're pulling away from the general purposes and from the uniformity, from the homogeneity of the screen, and towards arrays which are odd, customised, bespoke, non-uniform, heterogeneous, rather than pixel-like. This is another lovely example of a different kind of screen. This is Robert Henke and Christoph Bauder's work, Atom, which is an audiovisual performance work. This is a two-dimensional grid of white balloons, each of which has a white LED inside it. In performance, they move in the Z dimension, they move up and down, and they can be illuminated, and so it becomes a sort of three-dimensional kinetic sculptural work which works in tandem with audio performance. So again, another very poor screen, but here we're extending the kind of degrees of freedom of the screen, so the screen, as well as having activatable pixels, also has a third dimension. So on one level, this is, again, a low-resolution screen, but at another level, it's extending the kind of sculptural presence of the array in a different way, customising the array, if you like. This is another kind of a very corporate example by Art+Com, kinetic sculpture in the BMW Museum. It's a kind of articulated, vertically moving array of silver spheres which form various shapes. Another one by UK art and design group Troika. This work's called Cloud. It's in the Terminal 5 at Heathrow. And it's actually made from those magnetic dots that used to commonly be used in sort of transport signage, where they flip when you give them a magnetic pulse, an electrical pulse. So again, it makes this kind of beautiful clattering sound. Again, it's very much a sculptural object. This is a little tour just showing you this kind of a trajectory of, if you like, the disintegration of the screen. And I'm using work from United Visual Artists to illustrate this. So this is UVA's first work for Massive Attack for their 100th Window Tour in 2003. The entire stage set of the show was just a giant, very crude, very simple LED screen, but it was immediately behind the performers, very, very close to the audience, so extremely large, extremely confronting kind of display. Still very much a screen, though, but what happens over UVA's subsequent work is that the screen starts to kind of disintegrate. This work is called Monolith. In this case, it's a big, super bright LED array, but no image material, no kind of recognisable content is projected other than just kind of washes of light. So really, in this case, the LED array just becomes a light source, becomes a very quite subtly articulated light source. And interesting to note in their documentation how they emphasise the play of light into the space. They're not interested in the content of the array. They're interested in the way the array plays out into the kind of space that it's in. This is another UVA work. This is called Volume. Here, formally, though, that kind of book, that sort of screen-like configuration has been stripped apart into vertical strips and scattered over another two-dimensional array. So here, again, the screen has sort of literally been pulled apart. And these are independent nodes that are responsive and interactive and so on. And this is a recent work of theirs called The Speed of Light. And in this case, the array has actually disappeared entirely and the work is actually just kind of made of light itself. It's actually just consists of lasers and mirrors that are configured into sculptural forms. So it's almost like the light has kind of finally left the substrate of the screen altogether and is just kind of hanging in space somehow. So I think this sort of characterises the kind of pulling away that I'm interested in, where it's starting with a very screen-based approach and moving away into a much more concrete kind of present in the world, a striving for a kind of presence in the world. Okay, the next, also just a little recap of some of the formal tropes that we see in this kind of work. Lots of light and especially lots of LEDs. Custom hardware, so again, these people are not using standard kind of off-the-shelf stuff. They're often crafting or bricolaging their own stuff together. And again, we're pulling away from the generality of kind of standard infrastructures and moving towards a kind of odd sort of specificity. These images, these screens, are never just optical. They're always multimodal. They're often tightly synchronised with sound. And linked with that, they're always live. They're very often performative. Installation and performance are really the dominant modes here. So this isn't sort of imaging in any pure sense. Okay, so the second strain of work I want to look at is almost the converse of the first one in some way. And here I'm going to use a little trajectory through H.C. Gilgi's work, a Norwegian artist, H.C. Gilgi, which is again a pulling away from the screen, but in a different direction. This is a work called Drifter. It's comprised of 12 screen-based nodes. They form a kind of interstitial space where image and sound content move around within the installation. So there's a kind of implicit kind of inter-screen space, but still very much screen-based images. His background is live video and performance video. In this work, which is called Dense, he's projecting onto big, long skeins of fabric, but projecting from both sides, so actually using the fabric as a physical substrate to unite two different projected images coming from different places. So again, the image is really becoming material in a different way at the fabric. And so again, this process of the screen disappearing. In this work, which is called Shift, he's starting to work with a technique called projection mapping, where the video image is composited very carefully onto the surfaces of sculptural objects. So in this case, the image has actually been sort of wrapped to the world. It's actually been carefully tailored to fit a particular physical specificity, which is the specificity of that installation environment. And the video, the image, the projected image, is actually acting as a kind of light source, a kind of very carefully controlled, highly directable light source, which sometimes resembles video, as in the case of this content, but doesn't always resemble video. It's really being treated as a kind of illumination. And again, notice the attention that's being paid to the kind of the way the light plays into the space. And so then the final work in this trajectory that I want to show is the most recent work. Sculptural forms, and it's basically treating the installation space as a single sculptural specific physical environment, which is then treating with video projection. And again, it's really treating video approaching the video image as a form of articulated lighting, which can be customized very closely. And again, there's a lot of attention being paid to the way that light plays in the space, to the kind of atmospherics and diffusion and reflection and those kinds of things. So the trajectory, I hope you see that I'm trying to get at, again, is this pull away from the screen as a container for images and a sort of pushing out of the image into the world, kind of almost trying to rub the image into the world as tightly as possible. A couple more examples of this. I'm going okay for time, but I'll just show you. This is a work called Scintillation by a filmmaker called Xavier Chassaigne. This is also projection mapping work. So in this case, a flower is being used as the projection surface. It's very ultra small scale projection mapping. Again, I'm not that into the aesthetic of this. It's very lovely in a way, but I'm interested in the specificity and the process of actually bothering to fit the video so carefully to one particular flower so that it plays perfectly on the petals of that flower. That seems to be an interesting enterprise. That one, you can find that one on the web. Okay, so there's a kind of movement here which starts to get interesting. You would have noticed that the work I just showed you was really a short film. And so hang on, aren't we talking about post-screen here? Aren't we talking about pulling away from the screen? Suddenly the arrows flip around and this content is becoming screen content once again. And we're also moving back away from the specificity of this particular flower with this video playing over it, to the generality of, okay, now it's video, I can put it up on YouTube and, you know, the entire world can watch it and it can be screen fodder once again. So there's this kind of double cycle, a pulling towards specificity and then a pulling back into generality, or a sort of recuperation of the screen, if you like. Here's another quick example. I won't show you the whole thing. Whoops. Sorry, I'm just going to go back. Another example of, hello, of this materialization of the image. This is work by Berg, who are an advertising agency in London, called Making Future Magic. Again, look it up online, but what's interesting here is not so much the aesthetic as the methodology. They're using everyone's favourite glowing rectangle of the moment, the iPad, actually using the iPad as a light painting device. So they're programming content for the iPad and then using that content to generate time-lapsed three-dimensional forms in real space. And the result is this kind of artsy, craftsy, kind of very atmospheric kind of digital aesthetic, which is tremendously seductive as a kind of aesthetic, you know, message. But it also represents, for me, this incredible desire on the part of digital culture currently to materialise these images, to take these technologies which are so highly tuned for generality, to be able to show anything at all, and to actually re-engineer them towards specificity, to make them be intense and sort of be intensely present. Okay, so very quickly to wind up. Just a few themes there. Articulated light, the idea of fitting to world, which again is a different kind of specificity. Again, it's multimodal. Okay, so very finally, an attempt to kind of theorise some of this stuff very, very briefly. So we have this idea of the screen as self-effacing and general purpose, like the iPhone. We have this post-screen idea, which I would characterise as kind of self-materialising and specific rather than self-effacing. And the practices that I've outlined, I think, are trying to pull towards a kind of post-screen. That the my neologism, transmateriality, is really just an idea that is trying to talk about both the functional immateriality of digital technologies, in other words, their generality, and their real materiality at the same time. So can we think of if there is a way of being able to think about those things kind of simultaneously, then transmateriality, I guess, is my way of trying to do that, trying to say, yes, it's always material. Sometimes it's acting like it's not material, but it always is material. And there's a sort of dynamic between which of those poles are being emphasised, and it oscillates back and forth. Hans-Ulrich Gumbrecht introduces this idea of presence culture. I'm glad that Jens Hauser is here because he put me onto this stuff. In the same way that there's this pull from generality towards specificity in this work, there's also a pull between what Gumbrecht posits as meaning and presence, two opposite poles. So the pull towards specificity is also, I think, a pull towards presence, less concerned with meaning, more concerned with a kind of intensified being in the world. But as Gumbrecht also points out, this is an oscillation. You can never exist solely in one place or the other. In fact, most things are interpreted through meaning and kind of, you know, come to us mediated in meaning. Presence is a kind of fleeting moment, something that's there and then it's gone. So at my most optimistic then, what I like about this stuff, of course it can never, of course it's always recuperated as image, it always comes back to the screen, you know, we can never kind of hope to escape the screen into some pure kind of intensified material present. But what I do like about this stuff is it is materialized. It's also very custom and hacked and tinkered. It's engaged with its own odd specificity, which I think is quite interesting. And it does use performative modes, which do bring the work and I think the experience of the work into the world in ways that screen-based work doesn't. At my most optimistic, what I like about this is a sense of what I'm, with apologies to Gene Youngblood, calling expanded computing, which is this idea that computation is increasingly leaking out of the kind of isolated containers which it's been largely in and is starting to inhabit the world in richer and more interesting ways. And I think that's probably a good thing. Okay, thanks.